so I use my maglite to move around the narrow side of the house. The backyard is equally dark and tree-lined. A bicycle lies in the grass. No back porch or patio. Something moving. A squirrel or some small animal sprinting through my beam of light. I take a breath, shine the light on the house. A window well into the basement. I shine my light inside, just enough room for me to fit in there. The window's been unlatched, pulled inward. I squat down. The window's filthy. I wipe the muck with the sleeve of my sweater, but the light combines with the smears to block any view, like high beams and fog. I push on the window to open it farther, as far as it will go, to a 60-degree angle inward. A noise in the woods behind me. Something moving across fallen branches and dead leaves. I shine my light over the woods. Dry grass moving gently with the breeze. Long, naked trees like skeletons waving at me. An animal, probably. The open window gives me maybe an inch or two of space. I shine my light directly into the basement and peek inside. Looking right at me is a woman, sitting in a chair. Chapter 66. I jump at the sight, fall against the back of the window well, shine the light through the crack in the window again, make sure I actually saw what I think I saw. The small circle of light cutting through the darkness, searching for her. There. The woman, seated in a chair, wearing an old-fashioned shawl over her shoulders, her hair pulled back tightly in a bun, her hands resting quietly in her lap, a relaxed expression on her face, her mouth closed, her eyes glazed, immobile. "Town police!" I call out, just to be sure. "Ma'am, can you hear me? Ma'am, are you okay?" My pulse in overdrive, I draw back, brace my hands against the window well, raise my leg into kicking position. Wait, something about that. I lean back in, shine the light once more, find her again. No movement. Her eyes don't respond to the light. She's dead. I move the light slowly, probing as best I can the quality of her skin. Hard to do from a distance with a flashlight. But little decomposition. Actually, no sign of decomp. None. Her skin looks flawless. Even inhuman. I look around her. Next to the rocking chair in which she's seated is a... Oh, Jesus. My hand jerks, and the beam of light shoots to the ceiling. Hands shaking. I sweep the light through the darkness again, past the woman. A man, wearing some kind of coat, tweed, hair greased back, a thin face, eyes open and vacant, sitting on a love seat, legs crossed. Same deal with the glossy skin, the immobile eyes, unresponsive to light. Not dead people. Not people at all. Wax figures. I exhale with the realization. I was 2 seconds away from kicking in this window to rescue a couple of wax mannequins. I keep the light moving. An area rug on the floor. A battered coffee table with a vase and flowers. Fresh flowers, not fake. Against the wall, a faux fireplace. Something painted on the wall, complete with logs and a spirited flame. A television set. I can only see its back, but a soft, flickering glow emanates from it. The only occasional illumination in this basement, other than my flashlight. A picture over the fake fireplace. A blown-up photograph. Aiden as a boy. That scarecrow hair and scrawny face next to a woman. "What the hell?" I say, repositioning my feet on the bed of rocks. Which is why I don't hear the footsteps approaching me from behind on the soft grass. But I do hear the pump action of a shotgun. Chapter 67. "Don't move," a voice calls out. Startled, I lose my flashlight on the rocks, bathing myself in a little circle of light inside the window well. I turn my head for a look back, but it's no use. I'm below him and lit up. He's above me in the dark. I said don't move! Put up your hands! If I raise my hands right now, squatted down as I am, I'll probably fall over. I'm with... Hands up or I shoot! Listen to me. I'm a pol- Now! Okay? Okay? Easy. I do my best, like a tightrope walker struggling for balance, rising from my crouch and bringing my hands out, leaving my maglite on the floor of rocks. I'm half turned toward him so he can see my profile, but I can't see him. I'm a cop, I say. Southampton Town po- Who sent ya? I'm a cop. What you doing here? What right you got? I take a breath. Aiden, don't move. I'm not moving. I'm not moving. Aiden's breath, raspy and heavy. Mr. Willis, I just identified myself as a police officer. You don't want to be pointing a shotgun at a cop, do you? He doesn't answer. The correct answer, I say, is no, you don't. You know me, Aiden. I'm Detective Jenna Murphy. You saw me the other night at the cemetery. At which time, I note, the roles were reversed. I had a gun trained on him. Turns out it's more fun when you're the one holding the weapon. Put the gun down, Aiden. I'm not telling you again. He moves around so he's behind me again, my 6 o'clock. You come to kill me, he says. No, Aiden. I'm a cop. You coming to kill me? You've been following me. You think cause... No, Aiden. Why'd you have to come back? You shouldn't have come back. Aiden! I crank up the volume this time, trying to gain the upper hand. Aiden, I'm a cop. You know me. Now I'm going to climb out of this window well, and you're going to put down that shotgun. I move slowly, putting my hands on the top of the aluminum well. I'll shoot! He shuffles backward as he speaks, feet rustling in the grass. No, you won't. I jump and use my arms to push myself onto the grass. Don't you move! I show my palms, though he probably can't make me out very well. Now put down that damn shotgun, I say. I rise to my feet. I get a little bit of a bead on him, an outline. The hair sticking out, the shotgun in his hand. Self-defense, he says, raising the shotgun. I lose my breath, brace myself, consider my options. If I go for my sidearm, it's a long shot. If I dive, I'm unlikely to miss the wide blast from his gun. Something out of a movie. Drop and roll and come up shooting? You were at the cemetery tonight, I say.
No, I wasn't.
I'm calculating how well Aiden can see me now, standing as I am on solid ground in the darkness, hoping he can't see very well. You sure about that? I put my hands on my hips as if demanding an answer, my right hand sliding down to my sidearm, my fingers fitting into the grooves of the grip. Why did you take a piss on the Dahlquist grave, Aiden?
I didn't. You're just making excuses so you can come here and kill me.
My finger caressing the trigger. If I draw my weapon, one of us dies. Aiden, drop the weapon, I say.
No.
One leg moves back like he's bracing himself for a shot.
You're gonna kill me,
he says. Maybe both of us die. No, Aiden. And then we both hear it. Footsteps to the west, the beam of a flashlight coming into the backyard.
Aiden Willis, put down that goddamn gun!
The chief's voice. Isaac. Chapter 68. Isaac swaggers into his office and stands behind his desk. He crosses his arms and leans against the wall, next to the American flag and the flag of the town of Southampton. Blue and maize with a pilgrim in the center. He stares at me for a long time in his police jacket, a sweater underneath and blue jeans. I've been here a good half hour, stewing in my juices, after Isaac ordered me to the substation. Is Aiden in lockup? I ask. His eyes narrow. Aiden's probably in bed now, fast asleep. You didn't arrest him? He stares back at me, his eyes shiny with venom.
Are you carrying?
Am I carrying? Yeah, I'm carrying.
Hand over your piece.
Why? Isaac lets out a heavy breath.
Detective, your commanding officer has ordered you to surrender your weapon.
I blink. Something flutters through my chest. I reach for my sidearm.
Slowly,
he says. Isaac, what the fuck? I set my Glock, grip first, on his desk. He picks up the gun, ejects the magazine, catches it in his hand.
You been drinking, Murphy?
No, I haven't. What's the chief of police doing out on patrol past midnight? I ask. And why are we letting Aiden Willis walk when he was about to shoot me? He plays with his goatee, stares at me, almost amused. Having the upper hand is fun for him.
The better question, Murphy, is what the fuck were you doing?
Not such a good question for me, though. He told me to stay away from the Ocean Drive murders, my uncle's murder, anything other than safety issues at Bridgehampton School. So there's no answer remotely resembling the truth that will exonerate me. I give him most of the cemetery story, only I make it seem like I was simply visiting Uncle Lang's grave, not lying in wait for Aiden.
You actually saw Aiden take a piss on a tombstone?
Well, no, I didn't. Couldn't make out the actual act. Couldn't even make out that it was Aiden. But I'm not going to admit that. So I went to his house to ask him about it. And yeah, I looked around his place when he didn't answer. There are no lights outside, so I use my mag light. I just walked the perimeter, Isaac. He watches me closely.
You were shining a light into his basement?
Yeah, and you want to know what I found?
What does Aiden Willis's basement have to do with him taking a piss on a grave? I mean, assuming he even did that, like you claim. You figured what? You'd find evidence to support a public urination charge by searching his basement? No. You're up to something else.
I pause, but he has me. What possible bullshit story could I conjure up? And besides, I shouldn't have to bullshit. I'm a cop investigating a series of murders. When did that become a wrong thing? When did following up on a hunch just to see where it led become a capital offense? It was the Dahlquist grave, I say. The family that owned the house where Melanie and Zach were-
No.
He shakes his head presumptively, like he's had enough. Some strange shit is going on in this town, I say, trying to salvage the conversation. And there's something about Aiden.
Aiden Willis couldn't spell his own name if he gave him all the letters,
says Isaac.
And he couldn't hurt a June bug with a sledgehammer. I've known that kid my whole life. That boy is harmless.
He pulled a gun on me tonight, Isaac.
Yeah, and you know what? He had every goddamn right to. A prowler on his property sneaking into his basement? Landowners got that right.
I announced my office.
And maybe he didn't believe you. What's he supposed to think, Murphy? Lucky for us, Aiden's a reasonable man. He's gonna let this be water under the bridge.
Bullshit, I say, getting my Irish up, getting to my feet. He knows me. Even if he didn't at first, I identified myself. Yeah, okay, maybe at first I can't blame him. But he knows me, Isaac. I told him who I was, and I posed no threat to him at all. And he was still going to shoot me.
You're gonna let him walk? Hell yes, I am. A cop of mine, without anything close to probable cause, is looking into a private citizen's basement window? That's a lawsuit right there. The department doesn't need another black eye courtesy of you.
I shake my head. I can't believe this.
You're behaving in an erratic, irrational manner, Detective Murphy.
My blood goes cold. Magic words, those. The police union's collective bargaining agreement allows the chief to strip a cop whose behavior is erratic or irrational. A hint of a smile on Isaac's face. Oh, he's been waiting for this moment. Just hear me out first, Isaac.
Detective, turn over your badge.
Isaac.
No, you're suspended indefinitely,
he says.
I'm stripping you of your police powers. You're no longer a cop. You come back tomorrow, I'll give you 30 minutes to clean out your desk.
He leans over his desk, his eyes boring into mine, a snarl across his mouth.
Now get the fuck out of my police station.
Chapter 69. The dive bar's liquor license cuts off the service of alcohol at 2 in the morning. That means they have to stop pouring when the little hand hits 2, and they can't let in any new customers. It doesn't mean they can't hand over a bottle to me at 1:55 a.m. and then watch me drink it for an hour as they close down the place, turn out most of the lights, turn over the chairs and put them on top of the tables, and mop the floors and wipe down the counters. The good news for me is that I'm a regular, so I get the special treatment from Jerry, the bartender and owner. The bad news, I suppose, is that I'm a regular.
I don't like to speak ill of my fellow man,
Jerry says to me as he sprays the counter.
But I never much liked Isaac. Worst thing that ever happened to him was getting that badge. Give a guy with an inferiority complex some power and watch out.
I look over at him, my eyes heavy and slow, almost dreamy. Almost as if, an hour ago, I didn't lose the only thing that mattered to me in this world. Almost like that. Fuck Isaac. My tongue thick, numb. All of me feeling numb.
Okay, 3 a.m.,
Jerry says.
I'm gonna turn into a pumpkin.
He lifts the bottle of Jim Beam, 3/4 empty.
I'll hold on to the rest for you, Murph. Your private stash. Let me give you a ride home.
I surrender the bottle but shake my head.
You can't drive, Murph.
I'm not gonna drive.
I'll walk.
Pick up my car tomorrow. I step off the bar stool gingerly, get my balance.
Not like I'll have anything else to do. Let me give you a ride, Jenna. Come on.
I'm good. The walk will do me good. Or so I think. I'm about a half hour from here, and the cool air helps clear out some of the fog. My hand brushes against my side for my piece, which, of course, I had to surrender, because I'm no longer a cop. I'm no longer a cop. It still hasn't sunk in. I'm dizzy and unfocused, my emotions careening wildly from utter despair to bitterness to hot rage, grabbing at clues that don't add up. Like I'm trying to put together a puzzle that's missing half the pieces. The start of a massive headache is pressing against my forehead, between my eyes. By the time I approach my street, the inside of my head is screaming at me. But the blood is flowing again, and much of the alcohol's effect is waning. All except the emotional part. With the numbness wearing off, all that's left is my fear of what's to come. A life without a badge. And sleep, which will end, as it always does, with a breathless nightmare. I rent the bottom floor of a 2-flat, all of 4 rooms inside, living room with tiny kitchenette, bathroom and bedroom. Always planned to buy a place once I settled in, but I never really settled in, did I? I never got around to making anything about my apartment feel like a real home, nor did I buy an actual home. Probably for the best now. When I approach the apartment, I see something underneath the porch light. A figure. A man? I draw closer, feel my hand, by instinct, sweep my side for a gun that isn't there. A man, sitting up, resting against the outside wall.
Noah?
I say. Chapter 70. When I take my first step onto the porch, Noah Walker stirs. He was sleeping.
Oh, yeah.
He pushes himself up, shakes out the cobwebs. Sweatshirt, jeans, sandals.
Why are you here? Waiting for you,
he says.
Same question,
I say.
Second time. I wanted to tell you something.
So tell me. He nods.
I remember now,
he says.
Those girls.
Dee Dee and Annie.
I saw them. I remember them now. They were at the house, 7 Ocean Drive. I think they were squatting there. I was doing some work. I think patching the lower flat roof. I'm pretty sure it was them. It was 5 or 6 years ago, so I'm not positive. They seem like nice girls. If something happened to them, and I can help. So that's confirmation. I was pretty sure they'd been staying there. Hard to imagine the initials AC and DP scratched on the windowsill were a coincidence. But it's nice to know for sure. He looks up at me. He didn't have to tell me any of that. His lawyer, in fact, would have told him to keep his mouth shut. It doesn't matter anymore, I say. Go home. He steps in front of me. It does matter. You're asking because you think it's connected. Whoever it was who killed those girls might have killed Melanie. Melanie, right. He had a relationship with her. I loved her. Yeah, she broke up with me and it hurt, and I moved on. But you don't stop caring about someone. He takes a long breath, looks out in the distance. You know, after she died, you guys arrested me right away, and all of a sudden I'm on trial for my life. I never had a chance to, I don't know, to grieve, to mourn her loss. And then Paige's suicide. I didn't even know about that. The woman he was with after Melanie. That happened after I went to prison, he says. He slowly nods, gains some steam. Whoever killed Melanie, in my mind, he's responsible for Paige, too. And a lot of other people, it sounds like. Like those two girls. And your uncle. This is not the time for me to be thinking about that. The fog may have cleared from my head, but my emotions are on the verge of bursting. It's over for me here in Bridgehampton. Over. I didn't solve the cases, and I'll never be a sworn officer again. Let me help you, he says. Let me help you find him. I'm not a cop anymore, I say. I've lost my badge. I lost everything. I add, for some reason, whiskey-induced self-pity. You didn't lose as much as me, and you don't see me running. I look at him, still standing tall after what he's been through. Wrongly accused of a crime. Yes, I believe that in my gut. Crucified at Sing Sing by white supremacists he refused to join. Losing two women he loved. And still being harassed by our police force. And here he is, volunteering for duty. If it were me, I'd have run from this town as soon as I left prison. No, you wouldn't have. You're too stubborn. Just like Noah. That shield that has stood between us, suddenly gone. I start to say something, but don't. Everything swimming through me now. All the regret and anger and yearning. That familiar heat filling my body whenever I see him. But none of the typical restraints. All washed away by the alcohol and emotion, and I don't know if I'm going to burst into tears or I can help you, Noah says. I'm not as dumb as I look. I'm not a cop anymore. He shrugs. Then what do we have to lose? He says. Chapter 71. The key to all this, says Noah, is someone who's been dead for 20 years? 18, I say. And yes. We're walking the next morning along Main Street, the sun blistering overhead. I skip my morning run and pounded aspirin and water to ward off my hangover. The adrenaline helps too. Funny that I feel almost reborn after the pep talk Noah gave me last night. That losing my badge actually has the effect of motivating me to work harder. That's the thing. I may have lost my official authority, not to mention my gun, but I have gained some freedom. Now Isaac can't prevent me from asking questions and probing where I wish. I just better be careful. Because without said authority and without said gun, there are limits to how far I can push things. Noah follows me into the cemetery, all the way up to the Dahlquist plot. A family of violent, mentally deranged, suicidal men named Holden, I say. The first Holden killed like 20 or 30 women.
According to that book.
Noah read most of the book after I gave it to him last night. He must not have slept at all.
The dark circles under his eyes attest to that fact.
It may not be true.
Doesn't matter if it's true. All that matters is that he believes it.
Who?
Our suspect, I say. Our killer. Noah looks at the plot, the large memorial, then back at me.
He's mimicking what the first Holden did a couple hundred years ago? He has some kind of obsession with the family or something?
Very good, I say. You're smarter than you look.
Well, dag nabbit, Ms. Murphy. That makes me happier than a puppy with two Peters. I've been a hankering for your say-so.
All right, enough.
Yes'm. I'm as pleased as a goat in a briar patch, I am.
I shake my head. If it's okay with you, can we get back to the point now? Noah looks pleased enough with himself, but he turns it off and gets serious again.
Okay, so this guy has a thing for the Dahlquist family. Okay, I get that. But you said this is about the last Holden, the guy who died 20 years ago.
18.
Okay, whatever, 18. You're talking about Holden the Sixth.
Right, Holden the Sixth.
The guy who died without any heirs,
says Noah.
The guy who said, let me find this.
He reaches into his satchel and pulls out the book, opens to a page he has dog-eared.
The guy who said, the greatest gift I can bequeath mankind is to avoid procreation at all costs.
Yes, that guy.
The guy who killed himself by downing 2/5 of Jack Daniels, popping some pills, then slitting his own throat and tossing the knife out the window.
Yes, that guy. I agree.
The guy who was suspected of raping and assaulting a bunch of women, but the charges never stuck.
Yes, that guy.
The guy who, as far as we know, never committed a single murder.
Yes, that guy.
Not one murder that we know of.
Correct, I say. That guy. Noah closes the book.
It all starts with that guy.
He had no children. He committed no murders.
I mean, he was a bad guy. He raped women, they think, but the guy running around right now isn't raping anybody. He's killing them in violent ways.
I smirk at him.
Am I missing something? Noah asks.
I think you are, I say. Our killer is mimicking what the original Holden did, and he's pretty damn good at it. But the question is why? Noah stares at me, then shrugs.
I have no idea.
I think he feels a sort of obligation, I say. He thinks it's his destiny. Noah opens his hands.
But why would it be his destiny?
His jaw drops. I smile at him.
Oh, says Noah. You think?
I do, I say. I think no matter how much he didn't want to, Holden the Sixth left behind a son. A son who wants to restart the family tradition. Chapter 72. I leave Noah at the cemetery with a research assignment and continue walking up to the turnpike. It's a little before 11, so Tasty's is probably not even open for business yet, which is how I prefer it, because I'm not here for the delicious scallops. The gravel parking lot is almost empty when I walk up to the door. It's open, so I push through and enter the restaurant. In the back, chefs and servers are busy preparing for the lunch rush, boiling and steaming and chopping, wiping down counters, filling out the chalkboard with today's selections, shouting to one another in English and Spanish. The smells of garlic and butter make me reconsider whether I'm here for business only. Seated in the dining area alone is Justin Rivers, wearing a flannel shirt that he fills out very well, thank you very much, and blue jeans. He's got a pencil poised over a section of newspaper, a crossword puzzle. Must be nice, being the owner, relaxing while the employees bust a move to get the diner open. He glances up at me with those boy-next-door looks and smiles widely.
Detective!
It's like a punch in the stomach, but I don't correct him. I'm not gonna lie if he asks, but if he wants to think I'm still a cop, all the better. Hi, Justin. How you doing?
Great, great.
He looks down at his watch. I'm not here for lunch, I say. I was hoping to speak with you a moment.
With me? Okay.
He stands up.
You wanna...
Maybe we could step outside?
Sure. I'll be right back.
He calls out to his staff, though nobody seems to notice. He follows me outside and faces me, beaming, clean-cut and handsome.
Good to see ya,
he says. The million-dollar smile, the hair swept to one side, the broad shoulders. Thanks, you too. Listen, I was hoping to ask you a few questions.
Oh, you mean official stuff?
His face dropping a bit, like he's disappointed. I nod. If that's okay. Did you think there was some other reason?
Oh,
his face turns red.
Now I'm embarrassed. Oh, I feel stupid.
It sometimes takes me a while, but I get there. He thought I was going to ask him out.
A guy can hope,
he says. Now we're both embarrassed. Oh, Justin, I'm sort of... I mean, it's not that I wouldn't...
He raises his hands. No explanation required. My fault. My fault totally. God, this is embarrassing.
All the blood has reached his face at this point.
Go right ahead and ask, detective.
He nods for emphasis. Okay, I say, hoping that if I get down to business, both of us will feel less awkward. Melanie Phillips, your waitress.
Sure.
The mention of her name is enough to sober him up.
Great kid. Everyone loved her.
Well, I'm wondering if anyone seemed to take an interest in her while she worked here. He looks at the sky, thinks it over.
I'm tempted to prompt him with a name, but I want to see if he comes up with it himself. Well, I mean, she was very pretty, so lots of guys would stare and stuff. But, like, obsess over her?
Yes, obsess. He runs a hand over his mouth.
Nah, not really. I mean, she and Noah had that breakup, like everybody knows.
Noah. Not the name I was looking for, but since he mentioned it, I might as well see where that goes. What did you think about Noah for a suspect?
Me? Oh, geez, I'm no cop. I always like Noah, tell you the truth.
I noticed he still eats here, since he's been out.
Yeah, sure. We get a lot of blue-collar types. Probably because we're cheap.
But I assume if you thought he did harm to Melanie.
Oh, right.
You wouldn't let him back in.
Definitely. I never thought Noah would do something like that.
He always seemed like a good guy. Okay. I scribble a note in my little pad. Change of subject. What can you tell me about Aiden Willis?
Aiden?
He smiles, shakes his head.
Well, he's a good guy. He's one of a kind, but a good guy.
Could you be more specific?
I mean, he's unusual, I guess. I don't know. Maybe we all are. Good man, though. Good man.
This guy's Mr. Sunshine. Never speaks ill of his fellow man, as my favorite bartender would say. You said he was unusual.
Well, I mean, he comes in alone, sits there and reads some book, doesn't talk much, comes in for beers at night sometimes, but pretty much keeps to himself. Grew up here, went to Bridgehampton School. I think Noah did too.
What about you? I ask.
Me? I grew up in Sag Harbor, not far.
You didn't go to school with Aiden and Noah?
No, I went to Lanier Academy in East Hampton.
Oh, a private school.
A rich kid. I was hoping to talk to someone who went to school with Aiden and Noah. You didn't know them growing up? Aiden and Noah? Nope. Hey, Aiden's not some kind of suspect, is he?
I give a noncommittal shrug. Just basic questions at this point.
I mean, he's kind of odd, but not like that. Odd, but in a funny way, not scary.
That seems to be the prevailing sentiment. I don't remember laughing last night when he had a shotgun aimed at my head.
Well, anyway, says Justin, Aiden didn't kill Melanie.
I snap my focus off my pad to him.
How could you know that? Because he was with me, here, says Justin. We have a liquor license until 2 a.m. I was pouring, and Aiden closed down the place with me.
I feel some air deflate from my lungs.
You're sure? You're positive you have those dates lined up? It was a long time ago.
I'm positive, he says.
The next day, Melanie missed work. We were calling her cell phone, even sent someone over to her condo. Then the cops showed up and told us she was killed the night before at the house on Ocean Drive. They asked me who was here that night. I gave them a list. It wasn't that hard. It was just me and Aiden.
I scribble a note, trying to hide my disappointment. My biggest lead has just swirled down the drain. Chapter 73. Officer Ricketts, still in patrol uniform, shakes her head as we look out over the Atlantic Ocean.
I still can't believe they did this to you, Murphy.
You should take my advice and stay away from me.
Ricketts nods and looks over at me, looking younger than her age, her cropped blonde hair just long enough to show a hint of curl on the ends.
I'm not so good at taking advice, she says.
If Isaac ever knew,
I'd be fired. I get it.
We are quiet. The sky is darkening and the ocean is reacting in kind. A storm on the way.
We're supposed to catch the bad guys, Ricketts says. The day I'm not supposed to do that is the day I look for another job.
I like this girl. She's way more poised and mature than I was as a rookie, and just as stubborn.
I look at her.
Are you sure?
Don't ask me that again, Murphy. Just tell me what you need.
The last Holden was suspected in a number of rapes, right?
That's what the book said.
So let's see if we can find out if anyone filed a criminal charge.
Someone must have. Maybe one of his victims got pregnant.
Okay. What else?
I shrug.
That's it.
That's not it, Ricketts says. We should see what else may have been going on back then in the early 90s. Missing persons reports, unsolved murders. The last time you had me do that, I only went back 10 years. Now I'll go back to the early 90s.
To what end? I ask.
Who knows? Let's just do it. See what shakes loose.
I let out a long breath.
Ricketts, you're gonna make a good detective someday.
If I don't get fired first.
I take her hand. That can't happen. I wouldn't be able to live with myself if you got canned for helping me.
She waves me off. I just want you back on the force. We solve this thing, maybe I'll have my mentor back.
Let's not get too optimistic.
She looks at me. You know what you need, Murphy? If I may be so bold.
Shoot, be bold.
You need to get laid.
I let out a laugh.
It feels good.
I was thinking Justin. She says.
I hem and haw.
Yeah, I mean,
He's really cute. And I saw the way he was looking at you.
I've already told Ricketts about my conversation with Justin today. The substantive part. Now I tell her the personal part.
He actually said a guy can hope?
She pushes my shoulder.
What do you need, a written invitation?
Yeah, I know. I let out a low moan. Honestly, I mean, he's a really nice guy, but I don't know.
What? He's too nice?
I sigh. Something like that.
You like the bad boys, don't you? The guys with an edge. The dangerous types?
That's my curse.
Murphy?
She puts her hands on my shoulders.
He's a super nice guy. He runs a diner with incredible food, and he could double the prices and still fill the place, but he doesn't. I mean, come on. He's hot and he's sweet and he has a crush on you. You're gonna pass on that guy because he's too nice?
I just can't see it. I don't have time for romance, I say. I have too much to do.
I didn't say romance. I said sex. Just have dinner one time with the guy and then fuck his lights out.
And then, of course, tell me all about it.
The dinner or the sex?
Both.
I shake my head.
You know what you are? You're afraid to be happy, she says.
Thank you, doctor.
She hits me on the arm.
I'll get you that research, she says.
Hey, Ricketts, I call out to her as she's halfway up the beach.
I don't even know your first name. She smiles. It's Lauren. Well, thanks, Lauren. Seriously. Thank you. She nods back at me. One more piece of advice? She says. Get some sleep. You look like crap. Chapter 74. 2 in the morning. The promise of a violent storm no longer just a promise. The windows rattling from the wind and rain, the sky a deep purple. Pages and pages of notes all over my desk, pinned up on the wall. I take a sip of wine and arch my back, roll my neck, my head aching, my eyelids heavy. The answer has to be here. There has to be something. Just keep shaking trees and something will come loose. Keep connecting different dots and you'll find it. You're getting closer. Just keep telling myself that. I'm getting closer. Getting closer. Closer. Let me out. Bam, bam, bam. Let me out. Bam, bam, bam. I can't see. Can't breathe. Darkness. Then penetrating light from above. A shadow blocking it. A face coming into focus, backlit by blinding yellow. A boy. Long hair. A hand.
Don't touch me. Please don't touch. Get away. Please don't hurt me. I want to go home.
My head snaps upward. My hand shooting out across the desk, sweeping off papers, knocking the wine glass to the floor with a hollow clink. I take a long breath and shake out the cobwebs. The boy. The long hair. The hand reaching for me into the darkness. And the face. This time, I saw his face. A face I've seen before. The boy in my nightmare is Aiden Willis.
Chapter 75. Noah Walker pulls his Harley up to the curb outside Jenna Murphy's apartment. The streets are still slick from the heavy downpour last night. His sandals squish in the grass on his way up to the door. He raps on the door and waits, adjusting the satchel over his shoulder. When the door opens, he sees the face of a ghost. Jenna's hair is matted and unkempt. Her face is drawn and pale, her eyes deep-set and dark. A black Yankees t-shirt and men's boxers are all she's wearing. She squints in the sunlight, doesn't make eye contact with Noah.
You sure about Aiden?
She says as she turns back into her apartment. Good morning to you, too. He wishes he'd brought coffee. She looks like she could use some. The main room of the apartment looks more like an office than residential quarters. Papers everywhere, on the desk perched in the corner, covering the floor, lining the walls. Newspaper clippings, copies of police files scribbled over with notes in magic marker. Post-its haphazardly stuck everywhere. Organized in columns for the various victims, Annie Church and Dee Dee Paris, Brittany Halstead, Sally Feister, Melanie and Zach, Bonnie Stamos, and Chief Langdon James, her uncle.
You sure about Aiden?
She asks again, pacing the room, disappearing into her bedroom and coming out again. Am I sure Aiden's not a killer? Yes, I'm sure. Why? She shakes her head absently, still pacing.
I've been having these nightmares ever since I came here.
What kind of nightmares? She throws up her hands.
Like I'm trapped, enclosed, pleading to get out. And there's someone above me, a boy, reaching down for me, going to hurt me. And I'm begging, please, let me go. Don't hurt me. That kind of thing.
That explains the sleep deprivation he's noticed since he met her. She must have had a doozy of a nightmare last night, because it looks like she didn't sleep much at all.
Last night, Aiden showed up in the dream.
Aiden was the boy? Noah nods. That's because you have Aiden on the brain, Murphy. You think there's some meaning to your dream? Like you're assuming the role of one of the victims? Or you're seeing the future or something?
How the hell should I know?
She's still pacing. Then she stops and puts her hands on the wall.
Sorry.
I don't know. There's probably no meaning to it. I don't know.
It's just making you crazy, he thinks. She turns and looks at Noah, sizes him up, narrows her eyes. What? He asks.
The BB gun shooting at the school,
she says.
Back when you were a kid.
Oh, come on, Murphy.
I'm shaking trees,
she says. You're what?
Tell me.
She walks toward him, then stops short, her hands on her hips. She could practically fall over.
Someone did it with you. A second shooter. And then set you up to take the fall. And you let him get away with it. Some kind of code with you. Never rat out your friends or something.
Noah looks down, pinches the bridge of his nose. All these years, all the investigation that took place back when it happened, everyone was sure it was Noah and Noah alone. Nobody ever questioned that. Any evidence to the contrary was swept aside, and the unanimous conclusion was that Noah shot all those kids on the playground, all by his lonesome self. Not until 16, almost 17 years later, when Detective Jenna Murphy from Manhattan came along and patched together a couple of interviews and some dry reports and reached a different conclusion. If you're right, he says, and I live by the code that you don't rat out your friends, why would I rat them out now? She works her jaw, her deep-set eyes burrowing into him. What's it matter, Murphy? It doesn't have anything to do with...
You were set up,
she says.
You were set up for Melanie's and Zach's murder. You were set up for the murder in the woods, the hooker, Bonnie Stamos. You were set up for my uncle's.
Her voice falters. Her whole body is trembling now. She clears her throat hard, like an engine struggling to start.
And you were set up to take the fall with the BB gun shooting.
Noah shakes his head. What happened in that schoolyard doesn't have anything to do with the murders. It was close to 17 years ago now. She doesn't need to know this.
This guy is smart,
she says.
He's careful. He might be deranged. He might be schizophrenic or a psychopath, but he does not make mistakes. He handed you to us as a suspect. Shit, I almost shot you myself. I was so sure you were guilty.
That's true. Something he'll never forget, when she broke into his house after her uncle was attacked.
Look, I'm grasping at straws. I'm looking for anything I can,
she says.
You said you wanted to help. You gave me this bullshit pep talk about...
I do want to help. Noah slings his bag off his shoulder. You didn't even ask me why I'm here. Remember the research assignment you gave me? Jenna's eyes move to the satchel.
You found something,
she says.
Chapter 76.
It's not much,
Noah tells me, opening his satchel.
I searched all the public records. Turns out I knew one of the clerks there, someone who grew up down the street from me. She helped.
He removes a manila folder from his bag.
Holden the Sixth was part of three lawsuits in Suffolk County that we know of,
he says. Anything on paternity? I ask.
No, but my friend at the clerk's office said a lot of times paternity lawsuits are filed under seal. She said that means the names are redacted from the lawsuit, I say, kept out of the public domain. So it's possible there was a paternity suit, but we wouldn't know it. Yeah. I made copies of the three lawsuits I did find. They aren't criminal cases. They're civil. One is a property dispute, and one is a defamation suit, whatever that means. And the last one is a lawsuit for assault and battery brought by a neighbor, some guy who said Holden punched him at a party.
He hands me copies of the three civil complaints. He's no lawyer, and neither am I, though a cop knows a thing or two about the legal system. Nobody claiming rape. Nobody claiming paternity, I say. So we don't know anything.
We know one thing.
Noah takes the papers and flips through each of them to a particular page. He hands them to me. Each of these lawsuits has a sheet attached to the front of it with the names of the attorneys representing the plaintiff and defendant.
We know the name of Holden's lawyer, Noah says.
Chapter 77. The waiter opens the bottle of wine and hands the cork to Justin, who defers to me. The waiter pours an inch of Pinot into my glass, and I swirl it, sniff it, taste it, and nod my approval.
Cheers, says Justin,
looking very nice in a white shirt with an open collar and a blue sport coat. We clink our glasses. It's a nice place near the intersection of Main Street and the Turnpike. Not very far, really, from Justin's own restaurant, Tasty's. But this is more than a slight step up from his diner. Dark oak and caramel leather, dim lighting, people dressed as formally as it gets in the Hamptons.
What made you change your mind?
He asks me. I shrug. My friend told me I should have dinner with you. That, and I've gone about 72 hours straight obsessing about the case. A little battery recharging may be in order.
Well, I'm glad.
He takes a drink of the wine.
Hey, this is good.
It is good. If I saw the price correctly on the menu, this bottle was over $200. A 2011 Pinot from the Russian River Valley. All I know about wine is what I learned from Maddie, who would always line up the year it was bottled with the vintage and location to find the perfect bottle to pair with our meal.
I gotta say, I don't know anything about wine,
says Justin.
I'm the kind of guy who picks based on the label.
He laughs at himself.
Me too.
An awkward silence follows. He seems a little nervous. Not so adept at small talk, that's for sure. But that part I like. I've had enough of the smooth talkers. Still, with two people who aren't good at chatter, there is a palpable sense of relief when the appetizers arrive. Chilled zucchini soup for me, burrata with peaches for him.
So what brought you to the Hamptons?
He asks.
I stop on that one. I thought everyone knew about that,
I say.
Well, I remember the trial,
he says.
Some trouble you had with the NYPD. But I always figure there's two sides to every story. I mean, if you want.
An initial buzz is kicking in from the wine, maybe loosening me up a little. I was working undercover, I say, going after meth dealers, high up on the chain. I got close to the top guy.
How'd you do that? Get close to him.
He settles his elbows on the table. I slept with him, I say. I became his girlfriend.
Wow.
He leans back.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty intense. Only way to do it, though. These guys are wired tight. They don't trust anybody. But when it comes to sex, they don't use their brains so much.
That's pretty... wow.
So anyway, I say, I came to find out that some of the people helping the boss were cops. There was a whole ring set up. The cops were running protection for the dealers. So I sent that information back to headquarters. I reported it. I made a big mistake, though.
What?
I didn't report it to IAD, Internal Affairs.
Who'd you report it to?
My boss, the lieutenant.
Why was that a mistake?
I gesture with my wine glass. Take a sip. 2 days later, totally out of the blue, three cops are suddenly claiming that I skimmed off the top of a drug raid before I went undercover.
Skimmed off the...
They said I stole money and drugs from drug dealers. That I arrested them and only turned in some of the money and some of the drugs. Kept the rest for myself.
That kind of thing happens?
It happens if you're a dirty cop, I say. The drug dealers aren't going to complain, right? If you're busted, would you rather be busted with 1,000 grams of cocaine and $100,000? Or with 10 grams and $10,000? Either way, you're not getting any of it back. But you get a lesser sentence this way. It's a pretty classic shakedown. If you're a dirty cop. He nods slowly. Which I am not, I say. I touched a nerve in the department. I told the wrong person and they wanted to silence me. So they trumped up these charges and gave me a choice. Resign or go to prison. We don't speak for a while. I drain my first glass of the Pinot. Easy, Murphy. Don't let the emotions bubble to the surface.
Do you regret it?
He asks. I let out air. Do I regret not staying and fighting for my job? Every single day.
But it was three cops against one,
he says. I nod. That's what Lang said. He said I couldn't beat those odds. He said, get out while you still have your badge. Come work for me. So I did.
Well, I'm glad you did. Hope you like it here.
I shrug. I won't be here much longer, I say. I'm just staying until I figure out who killed my uncle. His smile loses a few degrees of wattage. It seems he might have had some ideas about me. I figured I should let him know up front that I'm not in his long-term plans. For the main course, I have scallops with sweet corn and shishito peppers. They are absolutely delicious. But really, no better than the ones at Tasty's.
They get their seafood from the same place we do,
Justin says. Really? You guys in this restaurant?
Yeah,
he says, cocking his head, surprised at my surprise. I put down my fork. Your food is as good as this place's, I say. But you can't be operating Tasty's at a profit with the prices you're charging.
Who said I was operating at a profit?
He smiles and takes the last sip of his wine. He calls over the waiter and orders a second bottle.
Okay, so what's your angle?
I ask.
This whole man of the people thing about not raising prices for 10 years? Angle? Why does there have to be an angle?
I look him over. Good looks, private schools growing up, an expensive dinner tonight, a restaurant that loses money.
I'm no saint,
he says.
We come close to breaking even some years. It's fun to have a place where everyone comes and enjoys themselves. It's fun for me, too.
There's gotta be something wrong with you, I say. Are you sure you're not a serial killer or something?
I never said I wasn't.
He smiles and wipes his mouth with his napkin.
You've been a cop too long, Jenna. You only see bad people. There are lots of good people in the world, too.
Maybe he's right. Maybe not everyone in this world has an angle. Maybe I've been so closed off in the cocoon of crime and punishment that I've lost sight of some things. Maybe losing my badge is a good thing. Maybe there's hope for me yet. Chapter 78.
I'll walk you to the door,
Justin says, pulling his Jaguar up to the curb. It's a nice ride, this car. Nice dinner, nice car, nice guy.
This was fun,
he says as he steps up onto the porch. My cell phone vibrates in my purse. I stand at my door, fishing for my keys.
So listen, Justin claps his hands together. I had a great time. I had a great time. It was a
great time. I rise up on my toes and kiss him softly on the lips. He responds, but awkwardly, his hand touching my arm, unsure whether he should open his mouth. Shy and clumsy. It was fun for me too, I say as we draw back. His face has lost a bit of color. Very shy. Call me, I say. He nods, then cocks his head.
Why would I call you?
I draw back. Oh, I mean if you want to have dinner again.
We already had dinner. Why would we do it again?
I stare at him, at a loss for words.
Gotcha.
He breaks into laughter.
You should see the look on your face.
Score one for him. He did get me. A little corny, but he got me.
I will call you, Jenna. For sure.
He pauses like he's thinking about another kiss, but he steps off the porch and heads to his car, whistling. I don't know very many people who whistle.
I don't know anybody who whistles.
Snap assessment. Nice guy, but not a lot of sparks. Then again, that's always been my problem. I look for chemistry right away, and if I don't feel it, I walk. Maybe that can develop over time. Maybe if I just let someone in, someone really nice. Someone without an angle. Justin drives away with a brief toot of his horn. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. I walk inside my tornado of an apartment and fish my cell phone out of my purse. The call was from Lauren Ricketts. I punch her up and she answers on the second ring. Murphy, she says. Ricketts, what's up? Suddenly, my enjoyable Saturday night with Justin is over, and I'm slipping back into the darkness, the quagmire, slogging through evidence and driving myself crazy. "I finished going through criminal complaints and missing persons reports," she says. "I went back to the 80s and got through the mid-90s. "And?" I say, my heartbeat kicking up. "Did you find any criminal complaints?" "No. Nobody ever filed a criminal charge against Holden the Sixth." Shit. I really thought that was promising. "And what about unsolveds or missing persons bulletins?" "No unsolveds that look interesting. Not from that time period." "And no missing persons reports that looked interesting?" "Just one from 1994, she says. "I guess it would go under the category of interesting. I wish you'd prepared me for it."
"Prepared you for what?" I ask. "Who was the missing person?"
A pause on the other end of the line. "You don't know?" she asks.
"Ricketts, just freaking tell me," I say. "Who went missing?"
Another pause, as if she's debating, as if she's thrown for a loss. And then, finally, she speaks. She says, "You did, Murphy. You were the missing person." Chapter 79. Sunday night, 7 p.m. The sun almost completely fallen now, a blanket of darkness, the air mild and pleasant. April Fool's Day, which feels appropriate. I was a fool ever to have returned to this place. I pull my car into Uncle Langdon's driveway just as Aunt Chloe is locking the house up. Some final boxes to remove, some papers to sign, before the sale of the house goes through this month. "I was so glad you called," she says. "We could grab a quick bite." She has a big smile on her face until she gets a look at mine. I stop short in front of her. No hug, no nothing. "What happened to me here in 1994, I ask, "when I was 8 years old?" Her face falls. Her mouth works, but no words come out. "I asked Lang why my family stopped coming to the Hamptons when I was a kid," I say. "He never told me. A story for another time," he said. "And then I asked you, and you said, 'If you don't know, I don't know.' Whatever that cryptic bullshit is supposed to mean." "It means just what I said." Chloe looks me over. "I don't know what happened. Nobody knows. Apparently not even you." "I saw a missing persons report, Chloe, from July of 1994. It ended 7 hours after it began." Chloe slowly nods. "That's right. 7 hours of hell, your mother called it. You went missing. You were playing down the street, just right down this street. And then you were gone. Nobody could find you." She places a hand at the base of her throat. It still gives me a sickening feeling when I remember it. "We looked everywhere. Lang had the entire Southampton Town Police Department searching for you. Your mother and I searched for you. Your father and Ryan searched for you. Everyone searched for you. And then? And then we found you." Her eyes shine with brimming tears. 7 hours later, we found you on the beach. You were just sitting there, looking peacefully out at the ocean." I roll my hand impatiently like I want her to continue. "I don't know what else to tell you," she says. "You wouldn't tell us anything. Lang said you were in shock. We took you to the hospital and they checked you out. Nobody had done anything or hurt you." "No evidence of any assault," I say, "sexual or otherwise." "No, nothing like that," she says. "Just this." She takes my hand, turns it over, palm up, and traces the small scar on my hand, about an inch long. "You had that cut on your hand." "That's how I got that cut?" I look at Chloe. "Mom always said I got it chopping a tomato when I was little." Chloe nods. "Sometimes we tell our children little white lies to protect them," she says. "Anyway, your family left the island that day and never came back to the Hamptons. They asked you about it for a while afterward. Days, weeks. But you wouldn't talk about it. Or couldn't. And then life went on. Finally, they just dropped it. The nightmare with a happy ending. I don't remember any of this. Or at least, I thought I didn't remember. I was at the beach the whole time? Chloe looks at me like she's unsure of the answer. For God's sake, Chloe, speak! She breathes out. No, that's the thing. The spot where they found you? I had personally looked there with your mother. It was one of the first places we checked. I'm sure of it. You weren't there at first. So I wasn't at the beach, and then 7 hours later I was. She nods. But you don't know where I was for those 7 hours. She shakes her head, her expression grim. 7 hours of hell. I look over her shoulder at Lang's house, now empty, soon to be sold to a young couple with a baby. A new life in a new town. New memories. New dreams. Get in the car, I say. Jenna, get in the car, Chloe. Why? You're gonna show me. The drive doesn't take long. She directs me, but I'm beyond being surprised at this point. There are any number of roads that lead to the sweeping beach, but I know which one before she says it. I drive down Ocean Drive and park in the parking lot and make her get out and walk onto the beach until she shows me the exact spot where I was found. Right here, she says. I'll never forget the sound your mother made when she saw you sitting here. Those nightmares. They aren't random spooky dreams. They aren't some glimpse into the future. They aren't telepathic visions of other victims' experiences. They're my memories. Repressed memories. I look out over the ocean, then turn my back to it, looking north. Looking at the second house from the end, looming over the coastline. The house at 7 Ocean Drive. The gothic facade, the spears aimed at the sky. The memories, the flashbacks are at their most intense when I'm inside that house. Paralyzing panic attacks every time I set foot inside that mansion. That's where I was. For 7 hours, when I was a little girl. I was inside the murder house. Chapter 80. My car bumps violently over the rough road, sending my head banging against the roof. I stop on the shoulder, not wanting to pull into his driveway, not wanting to announce myself in advance. I remember you now, he said to me when I accosted him at the cemetery. I find his driveway, walk up to the front porch, and reach the door. Open up, Aiden! Pounding the door so hard that my knuckles start to bleed. Nothing.
You shouldn't have come back,
he said to me when he caught me looking into his basement. My chest heaving, my emotions skittering about, I move to the window closest to the front door and look inside. The window is open, a screen letting in fresh air. I lean in, kick the screen off, push it into the house, and get one leg and my body through the window. Just as Aiden is rushing past me, panic on his face. He cries out in surprise and tries to avoid me, but I grab hold of his arm, getting a poor grip, enough to spin him slightly before he wrests his arm free. I'm off balance, my back leg just coming through the open window, and I fall to the floor as he continues to run. What did you do to me? I shout as I get to my feet and race after him. He reaches a door, looks like a bedroom door, and opens it and closes it quickly. I reach it a moment later, just as I hear the click of the deadbolt. I pound on the door. What did you do to me? What did you do to me when I was a little girl? Punching the door like it's his face, the blood from my knuckles smeared across the white wood. I rear back and give the door a kick. An interior door, not as substantial as an outside door. And it's been a while, but once upon a time when I was training, I had a pretty good kick. I kick at the doorknob and the adjacent wood. After 3 furious blows, it splinters, and then my foot breaks through. I reach inside and unlock the deadbolt and the button on the knob. He could have anything inside there. He could have the shotgun. He could have a knife. Nothing I've done so far is smart, fueled as I am by insatiable rage. But I charge through anyway. A dark room, but fresh air sweeping in. The window, open. He escaped out the back window.
I climb through the window and run into the backyard into a vacuum of blackness. He's gone. This is his home turf. He probably knows every nook and cranny of those woods behind his house. He's long gone. The darkness, suddenly interrupted by colored flashing lights. A car engine, tires crunching over gravel. A patrol car pulling into Aiden's driveway. I move to the side of the house and peek around to the front. I hear a car door open and close. I hear footsteps, but not coming my way, moving into the house. I place myself flat against the house, not moving an inch. The only sound, the gentle swaying of the trees and the wind. Then a light comes on in the bedroom where I just came from. I hear the footsteps inside. A head pops out of the window looking outside. I hold my breath. It's our beloved chief of police, Isaac Marks, illuminated by the light of the room. He's only 20 feet or so away from me, but I'm bathed in darkness and far to his right. I don't think he can make me. Shit, he says into the darkness. A noise. Then I hear beeps. He's dialing a cell phone.
You okay?
Isaac says.
Where are you? No, she's gone. I don't know, do you? She said what? Okay, don't worry about her. I'll take care of her.
I said I'll take care of this.
You gotta relax. Listen to me.
His voice fading as he leaves the room, as he moves into the interior of the house. Chapter 81. After waiting over an hour in Aiden's backyard, I head back to my car. Aiden's not coming back, and Isaac left long ago. My car is tucked away on the shoulder of the road down the street. Did Isaac spot it? I don't see an ambush awaiting me. No doubt there's an APB out, possibly a warrant for my arrest. I don't know what Isaac has planned. I don't know what he meant when he told Aiden he would take care of me. And I'm not anxious to find out. I have to get my car out of sight. I have to get myself out of sight. I pull my car into his driveway and ring the doorbell. Nobody likes unannounced visitors at midnight.
Who's there?
He calls through the door. It's Murphy. When he opens the door, Noah Walker is wearing an undershirt and sweatpants. He's clutching a hand towel, his face still dripping with water. As always, that heat across my chest. There. That's the difference. That's the spark. That's what's missing with Justin. No time for that now, Murphy.
You okay?
Noah asks. No, I say. I can't go home. The police are looking for me.
Well, come in.
He moves out of the way to let me in.
So what happened?
He asks. I broke into Aiden's house, I say. I know it was him.
What, that dream again?
Noah closes the door and locks it. He did something to me, I say. A long time ago, back in 94. The dream is a flashback, Noah. It's a memory. I saw the police report myself.
Then why wasn't Aiden arrested, or...
Aiden's not in the report. I didn't tell anybody anything. I couldn't. But now I know.
Look, Aiden's a strange bird,
he says.
But he's a sweet kid.
That's what everyone says. That's what everyone says. I grip my hair as if I'm gonna yank it out of the roots, feeling a buzz of nervous energy. What happened to me was in 1994, I say. And in 1995, there was the school shooting. I know Aiden was involved in the first of those. Was he involved in the second? Noah's head drops.
Murphy.
Tell me, Noah. Tell me what happened in that schoolyard.
Let me make you some coffee, or
fuck coffee, I spit. I don't give a shit about some stupid code or promise you made 17 years ago. People we care about have died. More will die. Was Aiden a part of that school shooting, or wasn't he? Flustered, Noah puts his hands on his head, looking off in the distance, probably pondering the importance of a promise made, or maybe just reliving what happened back then. Finally, he drops his arms, clears his throat.
I always met Aiden by that bench before school, he says. Back then, people used to pick on him. I tried to help him out. So we'd meet at that bench and walk into school together.
I suck in a breath. Aiden. I knew it.
So that day, I sat on the bench listening to music on my headphones. Then, all of a sudden, a gym teacher, Coach Cooper, is running up to me and telling me I have to come with him. I'm in big trouble.
I stare at him, waiting for more.
You didn't participate, I ask. You had nothing to do with the school shooting.
He shrugs.
I didn't even know it was happening. I was on the other side of the school, down the road, blasting music in my ears.
I step closer to him. What about the rifle they found in the bushes behind you?
Don't know anything about it. Never saw it.
And what did Aiden say to you afterward?
Nothing.
Noah raises his hands.
I was suspended for the rest of the year. I didn't see Aiden for months. When I did, I mean, what was there to say? I don't rat people out. And it's not like I knew Aiden had something to do with it. I still don't know that. I just know I didn't.
I start pacing. Reports said the shooter, the one they saw,